This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Another firefighter dies in California. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal. Along with Jennifer Koschenka, it is Tuesday, August 14. Thanks for being with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
The Mendocino fire burning northwest of Sacramento has killed a firefighter on loan from Utah. He is the sixth to lose his life battling wildfires this season.
President Trump has signed a defense bill that gives a boost to the military while also targeting China.
It's primary day in a handful of states, including Vermont, where a teenager who's not old enough to vote is running for governor.
And the latest way people are paying to save time.
I didn't know so many people disliked going to gas stations, but apparently there's a lot of people out there who cannot stand filling up their car with gas. So there's a new company, it's called Yoshi, and you can hire them to come and fill your car up with gas, as well as do other kind of gas station services like fill up your tires, do a car wash. It's considered a mobile gas station.
Peter Hawley at the Washington Post on a service that takes care of your car while you are not with it. The Mendocino Complex wildfire in California has taken the life of a firefighter from Utah. The largest fire in state history is burning about 140 miles northwest of Sacramento near the Mendocino National Forest. Cal Fire did not release details, only to say that he was injured while working an active part of the fire. He was airlifted to a local hospital where he eventually died from his injuries. Tom Allman is the sheriff in Mendocino County.
I'm urging all citizens to listen to the mandatory evacuation warnings, to heed the warnings, and understand if this could happen to a firefighter, it certainly could happen to citizens.
Fire has now grown to over 349,000 acres, but the ranch fire, about half of the Mendocino complex fire, is up to 59% contained. The fire season has already been a hard one for firefighters working dozens of fires, especially in California. The Carr fire has been the deadliest. Three firefighters have died in that blaze near Redding. In addition, five civilians were killed in that blaze. A new defense spending bill is now law. President Trump signed it yesterday at the U.S. Army's Fort Drum Post in upstate New York. The John S. McCain National Defense Authorization Act has received widespread bipartisan support for its plans to counter Chinese aggression and support U.S. military servicemen and women. Against the backdrop of an Apache helicopter and artillery, Mr. Trump told the crowd of a few hundred men and women that America is respected again.
With this new authorization, we will increase the size and strength of our military by adding thousands of new recruits to active duty, reserve, and National Guard units, including 4,000 new active duty soldiers.
The NDAA, an annual policy bill, seeks to counter a range of Chinese government policies, including increased military activity in the South China Sea, the pursuit of cutting-edge U.S. technology, and the spread of Communist Party propaganda at American institutions. Turns out a former White House official and former reality TV show star also recorded a conversation with President Trump about her firing. After her ouster, Omarosa Manigault Newman spoke privately to Mr. Trump, who seemed unaware of what had happened, and voiced dismay that she'd been dismissed. The recording broadcast yesterday on NBC was purportedly taken the day after her firing.
Omarosa, what's going on? I just saw on the news that you're thinking about leaving. What happened?
General Kelly came to me and said that you guys wanted me to leave.
Yesterday, the president fired back on Twitter after the recording was released, saying Chief of Staff John Kelly had wanted to fire her because she was a loser and nothing but problems. Mr. Kelly fired Ms. Manigault Newman last December for alleged ethical violations in a tense meeting that she also secretly taped. She's got a new book coming out about her 11 months in the White House. It's 11 minutes now after the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. The theft of a Horizon Air passenger plane from Seattle-Tacoma International Airport has exposed the aviation vulnerabilities that persist even after efforts to enhance security following the 9/11 attacks 17 years ago. Courtney Grigiori is Port of Seattle Commission President.
I've asked the question point blank, have we ever seen this experience? And I think this is really truly one in a million experience. That doesn't mean we can't learn from it and ensure this type of tragedy doesn't happen again.
Many questions about the incident remain unanswered, but Wall Street Journal aviation reporter Andrew Tangle says experts feel it will prompt a rethink of how to secure aircraft at airports. Andrew, explain.
In the 20 years since 9/11, we've come a long way in terms of airport security, as any traveler knows. There's more security to get into the airport. There is a lot of security around perimeters of the airport. All of the potential threats have been taken into account, but you know, increasingly in recent years, aviation executives and airline officials and law enforcement and so forth have become increasingly concerned with the threat of insiders. We saw what happened with the German Wings case some years ago, where a suicidal pilot crashed an airplane, and we don't know what entirely transpired here, but the folks we talked to indicated that this is, in many ways, an airport and airline sort of internal security matter.
Yeah, I mean, this guy wasn't even a licensed pilot, so explain how people like him would have access to planes, say, in off hours.
Well, he was a member of the ground services team. They handle baggage and move planes around for different types of reasons, maintenance or whatever on the airport ground. So they frequently, on these so-called tow teams, will be responsible for moving a plane for whatever reason. So they're, as I understand it, two people, generally speaking, on such a team. One gets on that little tractor that pulls the planes around, and the other gets in the cockpit and operates the controls as a so-called brake rider that is there to make sure that they can slam the brakes if needed really quickly, and they are familiar generally with the controls to some degree of the airplane.
I'm speaking with Wall Street Journal aviation reporter Andrew Tangle about airport security vulnerabilities after that stolen plane at Seattle-Tacoma International. How difficult is it, say, to spot these potential lone wolf guys who may do something like this?
It's a good question that airport and airline and aviation security folks are going to have to think about. A couple of security experts I talked to who have been involved in running airports and security at airports in the New York City area noted it comes down in some ways to making sure that coworkers keep an eye on their fellow workers. If there's something suspicious, if there's something off, it might be a good idea to report it to a supervisor. That's what they say. That there's some concern about paddling on your colleagues. But their point is that if you've got people who are in a very close proximity to giant machines that can be turned into weapons of mass destruction, it's everyone's business to make sure that everyone is in the right frame of mind and so forth. There's also a question about mental health screening and having resources available, too, for people who just simply need some help.
Thanks, Andrew. It's Wall Street Journal aviation reporter Andrew Tangle. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, Jennifer Koschenka is here with more of America's First News.
Britain police have detained the driver of a car that crashed into barriers outside the UK Houses of Parliament, injuring pedestrians during rush hour this morning. Television footage from the scene showed a silver Ford surrounded by armed police officers and fire engines outside the parliamentary buildings, the seat of the British government. Authorities say no one is in a life-threatening condition following the crash. A state judge has cleared the way for five defendants who were arrested on child abuse charges at a remote New Mexico compound to be released. pending trial. Despite authorities' suspicions, the group was training children to use firearms for an anti-government mission. The judge set a $20,000 bond for each defendant and ordered that the two men and three women wear ankle monitors, have weekly contact with their attorneys, not consume alcohol, and have no firearms. Police raided the squalid makeshift living compound near the Colorado state line more than a week ago in response to a report of children living in filth, severe hunger, and other dangers. More than 20 million people on the East Coast continue to be threatened by dangerous weather. Heavy rain has triggered flash flood emergencies in parts of New Jersey and Pennsylvania. Lehigh Fire Chief Patrick Morris says dozens had to be rescued on the Lehigh River.
There was one minor injury that was transported to a local hospital.
Pennsylvania residents were taken by surprise by how fast the water rose yesterday, flooding homes, floating cars, and buckling roads. One dramatic rescue in Phoenixville, west of Philadelphia, was caught on tape showing a 12-year-old trapped in a pile of branches. In New Jersey, cars floated away from a dealership that sits near a river in Little Falls, about 20 miles west of New York City. What's good for Tiger Woods is good for the PGA and its TV ratings. Sunday's late charge by Tiger Woods at the PGA Championship and the two-shot victory by Brooks Koepka have added up to ratings gold. CBS Sports says Sunday's action drew a rating of 6.1, up 69% from last year. It was also the highest final round coverage for the PGA Championship in 9 years. Woods hasn't won a major since the 2008 U.S. Open, but his presence as a contender is certainly driving up viewership.
What a draw. As I said, I watched it yesterday, Sunday. I couldn't.
You're one of those 69%.
Well, I knew that on Saturday he was in the running, which made it, you know, appealing to flip it on and kind
of
watch his charge on Sunday.
Yep.
Thank you, Jen. 22 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Tuesday. Time for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. If you want to take your business to the top, take it to a top 10 most improved state for business, Michigan. Contact MichiganBusiness.org today. Like many other products that are popular among Americans, vaping mechanisms are not manufactured at home. They are made in China. That means the tariff dispute between Washington and Beijing is likely to entrap your Juul and other devices. Here's this morning's Jennifer Koshenka.
An unexpected group of products may be caught up in the trade war between the U.S. and China, your vaping devices. Natalie Malik of the Washington Times has the story. Natalie, what kind of vaping products and accessories are made in China?
So when you mentioned vaping products, that refers to the newly popular Juul, which is a small rechargeable USB-shaped e-cigarette. And it also goes as far as the products that relate to cannabis.
And China is the biggest maker of all these things, or are there U.S. companies too?
Well, mainly it's China, completely.
How would possible tariffs then affect the price of these products?
So right now, manufacturers and designers in the U.S. who are profiting off of the manufacturers in China are making probably around a 5-10% profit. And with Trump's imposition of 25% on U.S. imports, including or China imports, including Juuling, that would slice profits.
And Natalie, these devices fall under a category called other machinery. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
So would this possibly create some kind of a black market for these products if this tariff goes into effect?
Yes, definitely. As we've seen in the past, when you put a price increase on products like e-cigarettes or even marijuana, it creates a black market. And people don't tend to quit smoking altogether. What they do is they look for other ways, other cheaper alternatives to do it.
We're speaking with Natalie Malik of the Washington Times. Natalie, do we know how much these products cost in general and how much the increase would actually be put on them?
So right now, Juuls are around $35 to $50 per starter pack. And the starter pack includes the smoking device itself and then the rechargeable pods that come with it. And basically, with this imposition, it could go a couple of ways. One way would be that the designers and suppliers of Juuls start seeing their profit margins shrink, which hits the economy, or the consumers have to start paying more to keep up their habits, and that basically is going to be up to the people in the United States who find out that it's going to start costing them more to sell these products, and then they're going to ultimately make the decision.
Yeah, so we don't know yet if any of the companies would absorb some of the cost.
So local vape shops that I actually spoke to said that they would try to absorb it, but that's only sustainable for a certain amount of time. If a company is losing money by providing Juuls or providing other vaping mechanisms, that's only short-term thinking.
That's this morning's Jennifer Koshenka with Washington Times reporter Natalie Malik. It's 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for four straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in advanced manufacturing, cybersecurity, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan as the most improved state for business. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org.
Listen to us anytime on TuneIn at This Morning, America's First News with Gordon Deal, and on Stitcher at This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Hey, glad you're with us. Welcome into Tuesday, August 14. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. A firefighter from Utah dies battling a California wildfire. The heart of Yosemite National Park reopens today following its closure due to a wildfire. Trump signs a defense bill that boosts the military. Queen of Soul Aretha Franklin is said to be gravely ill. Coca-Cola investing in Body Armor, the sports drink backed by Kobe Bryant and other athletes. And the 14-year-old, who's not old enough to vote but is old enough to run in the Vermont gubernatorial primary today. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. Do you dread trips to the gas station? A Silicon Valley startup that functions like a mobile gas station using field technicians to fill up vehicles when they're not being driven may be your solution. The company, known as Yoshi, is part of a crop of gas delivery startups billing themselves as Uber for gasoline. More from Peter Holly, tech reporter at the Washington Post. Peter, what's up here?
Well, you know, I didn't know so many people disliked going to gas stations, but apparently there's a lot of people out there who cannot stand filling up their car with gas. So there's a new company. It's called Yoshi. It's actually been around for 3 years, but they've been expanding lately all over the country. And you can hire them to come and fill your car up with gas, as well as do other kind of gas station services, like fill up your tires, do a car wash. It's considered a mobile gas station.
How does it work? That doesn't sound to me like you could just decide as you pull into a gas station and a downpour starts that you can say, oh, geez, I'd love to have somebody fill up my tank, or am I wrong?
No, you're right. So the way it works is you sign up with Yoshi beforehand. You set a schedule with them. There's an app, and you create the schedule by which they come and find you. So if you want to have your car filled up at your office, or if you want to do it at home, they'll come to you, they'll fill it up, and you communicate with them via app, actually via a bot on your app. So if they notice that your tires are flat, you'll get a little text notification that says, hey, do you want us to fill up your tires as well as give you gas? And then you respond and communicate with them accordingly.
All right, so you could tell by my line of questioning early on that I'm a New Jersey guy and I do not have to pump my own gas. So I was thinking you pull into a gas station and you can choose to have somebody pump your gas. But this is like your car is at home or you're at the office or you're out somewhere.
Yeah, this is even better if you're into people pumping gas for you. This means you go anywhere you want in the world, and they come and find you, assuming they're in your city. So it's really, you know, catering to people who are busy professionals who don't have time or say they don't have time to do basic things like pump their own gas.
We're speaking with Peter Holly, technology reporter at The Washington Post. You wrote, too, not everybody's comfortable with this idea of a startup lugging around tanks of flammable liquid, as you put it. Are there regulations that these guys are facing?
There have been pushback in various cities along the West Coast. It seems like Yoshi, and there's other startups like Yoshi, there's a handful that'll bring you gas. They are tailoring their services to local cities and trying to follow local laws. They claim they haven't had a single incident, but there's definitely pushback from fire marshals in certain cities who are terrified of the idea of a massive truck going underneath a parking garage with flammable gas. Now, Yoshi does train its field technicians. Those are the guys who actually go out and put the gas in your car. They are hazmat certified. Like I said, there hasn't been an incident, but, you know, it does make you wonder.
What kind of charges or fees do they ask for, depending on the service?
Yeah, so Yoshi is a $20 subscription fee a month, and then on top of that, you pay for gas. They have connections with Exxon, so they claim that you're actually saving money in the long run because they can get a premium gas at a lesser charge. But for the most part, it's $20 a month plus the gas plus whatever other services you want. Like, let's say you want to get the car washed, that's going to cost you extra.
Who do they see as the typical client, Peter?
I think the typical client is somebody who's kind of tech forward, leaning towards tech, who is really busy and has a disposable income. So probably a fairly young person, somebody not too young, but you know, between the ages of 30 and 50, someone who likes trying things new in the tech world, and somebody who doesn't mind paying someone else to do stuff for them.
More likely to be a city person than a suburban?
Definitely an urban dweller. I don't think this service is going to do well in suburban areas, or at least in rural or suburban areas at the moment. I think it's going to kind of focus on people who are really busy and in urban areas for the moment.
Boy, we continue to cough it up for convenience, don't we?
It does seem like that. This is the convenience lifestyle. This is a part of the convenience lifestyle. We're moving in a direction where people are willing to pay money for all sorts of stuff to make their life more convenient, whether it's Amazon or picking up, you know, a prearranged meal at Whole Foods, or getting on Netflix and getting a streaming right to your house and not going to the movie anymore.
How about that? Are there any competitors to Yoshi at this point?
There's a handful of competitors, but they're mostly along the West Coast. It seems like Yoshi is really taking over this industry at the moment, and they're continuing to expand. They're going to be in another 9 or 10 cities by the end of the year. That's their goal anyway.
Thanks, Peter. Peter Hawley, tech reporter at the Washington Post. In the past 12 months, he says the company has spread from 3 cities nationwide to 16, including Boston, Chicago, Atlanta, Houston, L.A. They've recently added Washington, D.C. Oh, and yes, the company Yoshi is named after the character in the video game Mario Kart. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, it should come as no surprise to parents, but in case you didn't know, your young kids are really good, probably better than you, at using electronics. A Utah mom found that out the hard way after her 6-year-old daughter used her Amazon account to order a stack of gifts for herself, achieving viral fame in the process. It began when the mom allowed her daughter, Caitlin, to order a Barbie doll on Amazon for her birthday. Caitlin then asked her mom to go back on Amazon and see when the package would arrive. The next day, the Amazon delivery man arrived with a bunch of boxes filled with gifts for Caitlin. Turns out Caitlin ordered $350 worth of toys, video games, and board games using her mom's account. Caitlin's cousin took a pic of the moment the packages arrived, with Caitlin standing next to the mountain of toys with an incredulous look on her face while mom stares in disbelief. Her post on Twitter has been liked and retweeted over 66,000 times since Saturday.
How about that? Wow. Christmas is canceled.
Yeah.
Because young Caitlin has taken care of everything herself in August.
And also, if this timeline is to be believed, not only did she order all this, but also did next day's delivery as well.
Sure.
Right, which cost a few extra dollars for mom.
You wonder if she set herself up with a Prime account. You know.
Right. Exactly. Wow. I get a little bit scared about that myself. I have my young kids, my 10, not the 6-year-old, but the 10-year-old. He'll go on Amazon sometimes to look up stuff like for his birthday. You know, like, you know, someone's asking what he wants for his birthday, he'll go up and look up stuff. And I often wonder if I'll get a surprise package in the mail the next day or a couple days later.
How about 6 years old?
Yeah. Hasn't happened yet. But
Alexa, get me some Barbie stuff. I need it tomorrow.
Yeah, you got your phone laying out. That is always a possibility.
Wow.
And there are always players on our favorite sports teams we don't like for one reason or another. Usually we begrudgingly accept them, hoping that management will see the error of their ways at some point and send them packing. Denver Broncos fans are taking that a step further, however, and putting their money where their mouths are. According to Bleacher Report, a fan in Colorado set up a GoFundMe page to raise money to help the team release quarterback Paxton Lynch with a goal set of $600,000. The page's creator wrote that the purpose was to raise money to cover the Denver Broncos' costs of cutting the 2016 first-round pick, who has seen limited time on the field in his 2 seasons. He also struggled mightily in Denver's first preseason game. If the Broncos were to cut Lynch, he would carry a salary cap hit of $4.45 million this season. Unfortunately, and despite seeing some interest from at least 10 fans yesterday, the page, as of this morning, had been taken down, which means that disgruntled fans will have to hope that Broncos management will take it upon themselves to release Lynch on their own. But it's
10 fans.
Yeah. I guess there are a few more fans than that. So it wasn't wildly popular.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, the fact that 10 fans were even willing to put up any of their own money to make this happen means that there are more than a few people who would like to see this occur.
Well, they like their football in Denver.
Yes.
What can you say? They're willing to take matters into their own hands.
That is true.
Right.
Passionate fan base.
Speaking of quarterbacks.
Yeah.
How about the Jets?
You
didn't mention that at all the past 2 days. Now that I've been back,
yeah,
Darnold, a pretty good outing.
You've got a quarterback, and he looks like he can throw the ball.
Right.
We'll see if that translates to the regular season.
13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for joining us. Adults who hold back and forth conversations with young children rather than just talking at them may be helping to strengthen connections between the language regions of the kids' brains. That's according to a new study published in the Journal of Neuroscience. A lead author told ABC News that dialogue with adults may lead to stronger pathways between two brain regions that are critical for language development in young children. The study by a team from Harvard, MIT, and the University of Pennsylvania was based on results from a relatively small group, though, 40 children ages 4 to 6. The researchers recorded the children and their parents for 2 days to capture the number of different words children heard, the number of words they spoke, and the number of turns they took in back-and-forth convos with their caregivers. The team then used an MRI to take images of the children's brains and perform common office tests to measure the children's verbal and cognitive abilities. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koschenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, the largest fire in California history turned deadly as another firefighter tending the blaze has been killed. Cal Fire's Sean Cavanaugh says the man was killed while battling the wildfire on the Mendocino complex.
A firefighter from Utah was working on an active portion of the fire where he was injured this evening. The firefighter was airlifted to a local hospital where he succumbed from his injuries.
The fire became the largest in state history last week. So far, 6 firefighters have died this fire season. The man accused of fatally shooting a black father at a parking lot in Clearwater, Florida, has been arrested on manslaughter charges. The shooting of Marquise McLaughlin reignited the debate over Florida's Stand Your Ground law after the local sheriff's office declined to bring charges in the case last month. 47-year-old Michael Draco is being held on $100,000 bond. Michelle Rayner is an attorney for the McLaughlin family.
We do stand behind the state attorney's decision to charge as manslaughter. We do believe it's the correct charge in order to sustain a conviction.
Authorities say Draco got into a dispute with McLaughlin over a parking spot before he killed the unarmed McLaughlin. Democrats are fighting to beat back Republican gains across the Midwest as the primary season rolls through Wisconsin and Minnesota, two states where President Trump's appeal among working class voters threatens to upend decades-long political trends this fall and beyond. In all, 4 states will host primary elections today. Peter Strzok, the FBI agent who came under fire from President Trump and other Republicans for sending text messages that disparaged the candidate during the presidential campaign, was fired on Friday. He is the 3rd high-ranking person to be fired from the FBI during the Trump administration. Elvis is still big business. An auction of Elvis Presley artifacts garnered $800,000 during Elvis Week, an annual event in Memphis that celebrates the legacy of the King of Rock and Roll. The auction featured 208 items that were all once owned, used, gifted, or signed by Elvis. Some of the most valuable items included a World War II pistol, a 14-karat gold blue lapis ring, and a publishing agreement that was signed in 1955.
We're going to be paying out big bucks for his stuff forever, aren't we?
I think so.
There'll be another auction 20 years from now.
Every year they do it.
Thank you, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. A candidate for governor in Vermont is not old enough to vote, but he's old enough to hold the office. Seems to be a little something overlooked by the state's founders more than 225 years ago. 14-year-old Ethan Sonneborn of Bristol, Vermont, is one of 4 Democrats seeking the party nomination to run for governor in the fall election. Vermont's primary is today. CBS News says he's met the requirements to be on the primary ballot. The Vermont Constitution does not have an age requirement for people seeking the state's highest office beyond having lived in the state for 4 years before the election, and Mr. Sonneborn qualifies. So he went out and collected all the necessary signatures to get himself on the primary ballot. His July finance report, however, shows the teenager has raised just over $1,700. He says he should be taken seriously because he's got practical progressive ideas and happens to be 14, not the other way around. Oh, and his chief of staff turns 15 years old today.
For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Great news! There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.